This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 35.
So I have passive investments. I passively invest in real estate currently, and I will do into the future with other groups, even though that we do our own deals. It's because I want to just kind of spread myself into different markets with different operators. And it's pretty great that you get a quarterly dividend distribution, and it really takes you about 5 minutes a month. And really, you can do the whole passive investing with reviewing your investment in really 60 minutes in a year.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below. Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Mike Cab from Average Joe Finances. Just want to talk to you today about Prep Agent. If you're interested in learning how to become a real estate agent and being able to pass the test on your first try, check out Prep Agent. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today I have Charles Carrillo on with me, and Charles is a managing partner at Harborside Partners, a real estate syndication firm. And he's been actively investing in multifamily real estate since 2006. He's a full-time real estate investor with over 250 multifamily units across three states and a licensed real estate agent in Florida. Charles also hosts the Global Investors Podcast, where he interviews professionals about investing in U.S. real estate. So, Charles, really excited to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
I'm going to start things off the way I like to start all these episodes off and ask you a little bit about yourself. So if you could share your story with our listeners and just tell us how you got started investing in real estate.
So I'm from a real estate family, I guess you would say. My dad has been a multifamily and commercial real estate investor since the 1980s. So when I was growing up, it was a normal thing that it would be like during elementary school, one night a week. And on Saturdays when I wasn't doing sports, Saturday morning, you were at properties, talking to contractors, talking to superintendents and different partner, everything. We'd walk properties for brokers. He everything that he had to do when he was self-managing properties with a small team. And then kind of, I was like, oh, this is something I didn't really want to do at that point. The properties weren't the best. And, I'd have to say most of them were D-class properties at that point in time. They're probably now C-class properties if he still owned them. But, after graduating college, my dad really pushed me to start investing in real estate. And it wasn't something I really wanted to do right away. I knew it was something I wanted to get into, but I was kind of pushing it off. And bought a property after college, a three family. And we didn't have a word for it back then or a term, but it's now called house hacking, where you live in one unit and rent out the other two. I actually had a roommate. I think I had two roommates at one point. I was renting out everything in my apartment. That age, you can do whatever you want. And then I got a little over my head with the renovations on it, but finally got it done after 2 or 3 months of hell working with contractors and with my dad's kind of mentorship, and bought another property a couple of years later, about a block away, much better property. One of my best properties I own now. Then a year later, I bought another one and kind of went from there little by little. I self-managed them for 6 years. And then in 2016, started working with syndications, and we've been involved with syndications for a few years now. Most of our units are in syndications, and then I still have the small portfolio in Connecticut where I'm from, and I live down in Florida now.
Wow, that's a lot to unpack, man. That's awesome. So being able to grow up in that type of environment and, you know, accompanying your dad out there, you know, walking through the properties and everything, that's got to be something else. And I can understand why you probably didn't think that was going to be the right path for you back then as a kid. You know, my dad, he was a air freight truck driver, right? And I used to go with him on some of his like you know, few day trips, like over a weekend and stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was like, yeah, I don't think that's going to be for me when I was younger. And so I wound up joining the military instead. You know, you wound up circling back because you realized, you know, just what this all brought to the table. And I thought it was pretty neat to hear that. And then, you know, before we even knew what house hacking was, you were doing it, you know, when you bought that first property. That's really amazing. I try to tell everybody that I talk to that's looking to buy their first property, especially if they're single and they don't have kids, or even if they're newly married, but they don't have any kids. I'm like, look, buy a property that you could house hack by either renting out the rooms, or buy a duplex or a triplex or a quadplex, live in one unit, rent the rest out, just live there for 2 years and then move out, go buy the house that you really want, while these other folks are paying your mortgage and you're pocketing a little profit from that as well. You can't beat that. I mean, that's just a great way to get started. So really, really appreciate hearing that from you. So that's really awesome, man. So can you tell me what makes cash flowing real estate so powerful?
Well, it's like you have other asset classes out there, and you'll have, you know, you can go into stocks and equities and stuff like this, and you'll get paid a dividend. And I understand that's like completely hands off, and it's much different from real estate. But when you're able to, when we buy properties, we're buying properties, and our metric really of what we're looking for criteria on cash return is 8-9%, and on smaller properties, maybe even the double digits, depending, because there's more hassle with those smaller properties. So it's something where there's not many investments where you can get into where, first of all, there's leverage. So you're able to buy 4 times more, let's say, property than what you have cash for, and then also receive 8% monthly, right? 8% split up over monthly or quarterly, if you're depending on the type of investment that you're doing. And then also have an asset that's going up in value, that's holding in most markets, right? Holding with inflation on the way up. So it's a very favorable asset class. And you know, real estate goes in these, like now where we're talking, real estate's been very, very competitive for the last few years, especially multifamily with everybody getting into it. And it's completely night and day from when I was buying properties in the end of 2009, where I was finding these small multifamily or mixed use commercial properties, and they'd be sitting on the market for 5 months. And you could go in there and without having any realtor tell you no, you could go in there and put an offer in for 30% less than what they're asking and actually have them come back and counter you. And now that's like, if you're not going over the price, you're not going to get the deal, or they're staying on the market for one day. So it's interesting how it changes and how real estate has these ups and downs. And it's such a great asset class. And I think that when you're investing, if people are investing just for appreciation, I think it's kind of dangerous, because when we were self-managing and stuff through 2007, 2008, 2009, we never dropped our rents. We maybe didn't raise them as much as we wanted to, but we didn't drop them. And that's something that if you have the long-term debt with reserves on your property and it's cash flowing positive, it's, you really can avoid most issues that you're confronted with.
Right on. Yeah. So a lot of people will talk about how appreciation is a huge factor when buying real estate, which I definitely appreciate appreciation, right? It's really good. My primary residence has appreciated greatly since I purchased it 2.5 years ago. It's insane. But yeah, you can't just rely on that, because you can look back to what happened in 2008 and 2009 and the folks that were sitting there banking on appreciation and not having any type of cash flow, you know, and if they had multiple rental properties like that, they were in the hurt locker, and a lot of them probably filed bankruptcy back then. So cash flow is very important. You know, cash flow is king, really. If you're buying properties and it's not cash flowing, then you're probably putting yourself in a very dangerous spot. It might work for you short term, long term, or, you know, it just depends on where the economy is heading. And none of us are mind readers, right? We can kind of tell with, you know, there's signs, there's different indicators that we can look at. But I'm telling you right now, like 2020 really surprised me, because a lot of folks were saying that, you know, the market's going to crash, the real estate market's going to crash, the stock market's going to crash, everything's going to crash. Yeah, we had that blip back in March, but we came back even stronger. It's absolutely insane. And real estate, like you said, especially, yeah, out here in Hawaii where I live, in my neighborhood alone, like if a house goes on the market and it's been on the market more than 3 to 5 days, it's considered sitting. It's absolutely insane. houses are getting offers in less than a week. It's an amazing time to be into real estate, right? With that being said, can you tell me about the pros and cons of passive investing?
So passive investing is a great way of getting into real estate. And, you know, so when you're buying property as an active investor, you're really buying a business. So if I go out and buy a 10 unit apartment building and I'm really buying a business, and maybe I'll have that professionally managed, and that'll take a lot of the time sensitive items off my plate and put it onto my property management's plate. But the thing though is that it's going to be something where you're still running a business, and you're still something that you have to actively manage and keep in contact with, right? So properties that I own in Connecticut that I've had professionally managed for 9 years plus, those properties, I mean, I still check in with my managers on that. I still get called when a repair is over a threshold that I've kind of set with them. And so it's semi-passive is what I would consider it, you know. When you're going passive and you're going full passive, which is usually done with like a syndication, which is really the only legal way of doing it, which is syndication. And when you're doing that, that's something where you're now tapping in to the competitive advantage of the general partners, and you're tapping into what they're buying and what they have access to that you don't have access to. And the other thing of that too is that it's completely passive. So I have passive investments. I passively invest in real estate currently, and I will do into the future with other groups, even though that we do our own deals. It's because I want to just kind of spread myself into different markets with different operators. And it's pretty great that you get a quarterly dividend distribution, and it really takes you about 5 minutes a month. And really you can do the whole passive investing with reviewing your investment in really 60 minutes in a year, if everything's running right. If something else, maybe you write an email to your operator with any kind of questions you have, but normally you're getting a report, you're reading through the bullet points, you're checking a few things, everything's moving forward as it's supposed to. They give you an overview of what the plan is of what you're doing. Then, hey, something just hit your bank account and it's a distribution. And it's pretty much a really great way, especially for busy business owners. Cause there are a lot of people that come to me and they'll say, hey, I want to, I want to buy real estate. And they might have a high paying, like really serious high paying job. And like, no, you might as well just build on what you're doing right now, cause it's working for you, and spend time, just invest passively with different operators and spread it over. Because for you starting again, you're wasting all this time where you might be making, you know, a couple hundred dollars or something an hour with your job. You don't want to be having to talk to, you know, some property manager about some 6 unit you just bought, you know what I mean? And figuring out if someone opened up the basement for the natural gas guy to come in and turn on, unit 3. So that stuff you with passively, the problem though, is that you don't have any say in it, right? If you're a passive investor, you're a passive investor. And so you have to really trust that the operators you're operating with have are alignment of interest, which easiest way of doing that is making sure they're putting a sizable chunk of money in there, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20% of whatever the down payment is, or the raise money is, they're putting in themselves, because then you know you're on the same page. And you make sure that they're paid on performance and they're actually compensated correctly. You know, I never negotiate or complain about fees when I invest passively, because I know how hard it is, especially in this market. And I was just talking to someone, they went through 129 deals before finding a deal to buy. That's a lot of underwriting. So that person's earning a 2% acquisition fee all day long. And they can do that all day long, because I'm not underwriting 129 places. So it's something that if you can tap into a great operating management company, and they have their team in place, and you can kind of just like piggyback on them. And that's really the best way of doing it. And obviously when you're getting into these much more seasoned syndicators, you can't even put your money with them, because they fill up their raise periods and their raises so quick that you're kind of always on the back burner with them. So it just shows that there's so much money going into real estate, and you can avoid all this active hassle if you're working with a group that has your best interest in mind and you have some alignment of interest on the asset.
Absolutely. So part of the pros with that, I want to know, so are there any tax benefits for those limited partners that are passively investing in these syndications?
Yeah, for sure. So typically what happens is in a syndication in the first few years, so typical syndications are going to be, they're going to tell you the lifeline, because they have to come up with some to create an internal rate of return estimate, pro forma, they're going to say it's 5 or 7 years, so they can tell you some sort of kind of total return you're going to get on your investment. And that's normally what they'll do, 5 or 7 years, probably 7 years to 10 years with COVID. And then what you're going to do is, once you put money in, the first few years of you getting those distributions, what we call like a preferred return of 7 or 8%, depending on the deal, those you're getting cash, but it's really what we call like a phantom write-off and a phantom deduction, and that is depreciation. So you get these huge depreciation bonuses that come out. And I don't know what's happening with the new administration, but what it used to be is that we used to be doing bonus depreciation, and we could like in the first year write off so much of the property. And like your regular, you add on what we call capital expenditure, which usually has to be depreciated out. Like you add on a new fitness center, right? And in certain situations, these larger CapEx projects, we could actually depreciate out as regular expenses for the year. So that completely erases any type of gains. So someone might get, they might put in say $100,000, and it's not unusual if maybe they bought it, they had halfway through the year, and they got back $4,000 in distributions from that syndicator, and they might get a tax return that says that they lost $45,000 on it because of all the depreciation. Now, every deal is different and stuff like this, but those numbers are accurate. It happened, it was actually numbers I'm quoting from a deal of my own, from my own. So it's like, that's very powerful. And that writes off against your passive income, unless you're a real estate professional, and it can write off against your earned income, which is a whole different thing. There's some serious tax benefits with real estate.
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider for folks that are looking at passive investing. That's amazing. Okay, so besides doing syndications, right? For the folks that are looking to just invest in rental properties, because you do that as well, right? What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see real estate investors make?
I think not doing their due diligence and getting into what we call heavy lifts, or which is really larger renovations up front. And that's what I did wrong on my first project. I should have bought something that was a little bit more turnkey. And when I say turnkey, I don't mean going to a turnkey provider. I mean something that's a little bit more renovated and you're kind of just putting on the finishing touches, let's say. And that's what you really want to do for your first project. And don't worry about the money you're leaving on the table from not doing that huge building down the street that's been vacant for 3 years. Do the one that's 95% occupied. And when you walk it, you see that, oh, I only need to put in about $300 or $400 a unit, and then put your numbers as it needs to be $1,000 a unit because you're going to be missing something. Make sure that you have long-term debt. Don't go and get variable debt. That was another thing that happened in 2008. It was a resetting of the loans that killed people. If they had that long-term debt, that would have been something too that would have saved them. If they were renting them out and they're actually cash flowing with long-term debt and they held on to them for 10 more years, they probably would have sold them at quite the profit, especially with what's going on with 2020 and COVID and home prices. But the thing though is that reserves, long-term debt, getting into something that's a light rehab. And that's what you really want to do when you're looking for your first property. That's what I would say.
So when you're saying long-term debt, you're talking about like having a fixed interest rate, not variable, right?
Yep. You're looking for like, if you went through a commercial bank, if you had a small commercial properties or a multifamily property that was 5+ units, you are typically looking for, if you went through a commercial bank, so it's like under $1 million loan amount, typically they want to give you a 5 or 10 year term on that. And they might have a lower term too. They might have a 3 year term. The thing though is that if you're planning on keeping the property for 5 years, get 10 year term and just make sure that you know, because when that's resetting, if interest rates are higher, which they probably will be in 3 years from now, that's something that you have to now pencil into your pro forma, because you're paying the property right now with the treasury bill, the T-bill 10 year right now that we have. That's how your mortgage is kind of priced. Down the road, that goes up by a percent or two. I mean, that's very going to be negatively consequent to your cash flow, because you're paying this additional debt. So if you can get long-term debt on your properties, that's something that's going to be the safest way to having a less volatile, less risky investment. And you can do that if you're house hacking. You can just get 1 to 4 units. You can just get a FHA on your first. That's going to be a 30-year fixed, amortized, super cheap rates right now. And that's something where you know what your cost is going to be every month. Obviously, with taxes and insurance, that will change, but you can pencil that in and kind of have an idea of what will change with it. Do that. You don't want to go into something and, I've got 2 years and I got to refinance this. And then now what happens if I can't refinance it? You just don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, because if you get yourself to that point where 2 years later you're going to go refinance and the rates have skyrocketed from the time that you purchased that property, that you are going to be in the hurt locker for sure. So let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors. What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about Wealth Tender. If you are a finance content creator, whether that's a blog, a podcast, you're a financial advisor or a financial coach, I highly recommend you check out Wealth Tender. Wealth Tender is building a database of all the top finance blogs, podcasts, and the financial advisors and financial coaches that they have on there are vetted and top notch. So we actually had the pleasure of hosting Brian Thorpe, the CEO and founder of Wealth Tender, on Average Joe Finance's podcast, episode 25. Go check out that episode, listen to his story, and listen to him talk about the database that he's building. It's really phenomenal stuff. So if you're interested in checking out the directory, or if you're a finance content creator and you're interested in joining up with the directory, go to the link below in the show notes or check out www.averagejoefinances.com/wealthtender. Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Mike Cav with Average Joe Finances. You know, we're living in some pretty tough times right now. And if you don't have life insurance, you should probably get it. You need to protect yourself, protect your family, and protect what you own. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description. Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Sure. So it's funny because like the next question I was going to ask you, I think we kind of answered most of it, but I'm going to see if there's anything else you want to add on. But the question is, how do you mitigate risk when investing in real estate? So I know we've already got, you know, making sure you're doing your proper due diligence, making sure you're shopping for that longer term, you know, fixed rate. What are some other things, you know, maybe a new investor can do to make sure that they're mitigating their risks?
Make sure you have proper reserves. It's a huge thing. Make sure you have proper reserves. And when you're doing your renovation budgets, just increase it like dramatically. And if you think you're going to go in and put 10,000, have 15,000 and plus.
Wow. You know, so have you're talking about like a 50% increase. Then.
There's going to be so much stuff, especially with older properties. I mean, the stuff I found with properties, I mean, you know, I found people like using like almost like garden hosing and walls between copper pipes. And you never knew it when you're doing due diligence and just was dripping in the basement. And I have to send my plumber in to take out a wall. And do, there's stuff that you're just never, there's always going to be something that pops up. You don't know the property. And there's always something that's going to be an issue that's going to jump out. And you just, if your first one, just put additional money to the side. Worst case scenario, you're putting it in a savings account and that's not the best thing, but you don't have to worry about pulling the money on your credit card advance or any of this kind of crazy stuff when you have an issue. But just be mindful that there's going to be stuff that's going to pop out, or there's going to be stuff when you're doing renovations and you're going to have the question of when the contractor's like, are we doing it this way or are we doing it the right way? And if you're holding it long-term, obviously you want to do it the right way. And that's obviously going to be more expensive. So it's something that these different things that are going to jump up, just make sure you're aware of them beforehand. And if a contractor's telling you, you know, they don't know, they're going to tell you that. A good contractor's going to say, hey, we have no idea when the wall comes down. Or, you know, and you shouldn't be doing anything where you're moving walls in the first time. But if you're changing plumbing in something or doing something, you know, you don't know what could be behind there. So just make sure that you're, first of all, getting into something that's really ready to go, ready to rent off the bat, and then just making sure that you have reserves. And I would put a few months of principal, taxes, and interest aside as well for your insurance for to the side for a reserve as well. So,
yeah, that's a good call. And that due diligence is so important. So I bought a property back last year in February, duplex back in Virginia, right? I'm out here in Hawaii, but I was stationed in Virginia for 15 years. So I really know the area. And I bought this property. This is before I knew the world was going to end. And so I bought it sight unseen. I had my GC go out and take a look at it and, you know, look over, and he told me like, hey, you know, you got this, you got that, but it's got good bones. This is, you know, these are some of the things I would fix. Do you still want to do it? And, you know, and crunching numbers, like it looked like a good deal to me. So I bought the property. Now the property is 100 years old. It was built in 1920. So I didn't realize some of the things that were going to come up. Thankfully, I had the reserves put to the side. And then what I did as well is I took all the rental money that I was making, all the profit from that, and I just kept it in the account in case of emergencies. I was like, I'm not taking a profit from this property at all until I know for sure I've fixed everything I need to fix and all that. Well, come to find out, there was some more work that needed to be done, like more than what I originally thought needed to be done. And I'm like, well, you know, why don't I just fly out there and go do some of the work myself? You know, I can go pick up the materials and do some of this work. It's nothing crazy, right? The problem is the world ended and I couldn't leave the island. I couldn't fly off, and I'm relying on all these other people that are doing these things for me when I can't see anything. So I'm looking at pictures, I'm looking at videos, and it became a headache. So yeah, I don't think I'll do that again. I think if there's a property that I'm not sure about, especially when it's not, I guess, more of a turnkey like you were talking about, I think I'll fly out and go take a look at it myself next time just to be sure. So yeah, that's definitely important, man. So I just want to give my little take on that because I recently just felt the pain of that big time. Okay, so for you as a syndicator, how do you decide which sponsors and deals and like just markets in general that you want to focus on when you're looking at these different deals?
When we're picking out states that we want to work on, it's mainly going to be landlord-friendly states. And what that really means is it's going to be in the Southeast for the most part. So over the last month, our team's been underwriting all the way from, you know, Texas all the way to the Carolinas and South, you know, Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida. And so it's really finding the states first that we want to work in that are going to be beneficial to us as landlords. And secondly, is going to be finding markets and neighborhoods within them that we want to invest into. And that's going to be, so when you're going into, like we're into Florida and we're going to say, okay, we like Tampa, possibly like Orlando, we like Jacksonville, we like a couple other smaller markets in there. And what we're going to do is then we will figure out what our team is like for that. So if we are working, like our last deal, it was our company and two other companies on the general partnership side, and everybody had their own role. We went together on a couple parts of the roles, and then we had our own specific roles. That's kind of how we figured out where, hey, we have people that are local to this property. We have people that know about this property. We have one of our partners has a in with a great property manager in this area. You know, so these different things is what you want to figure out. You want to tap into, see, in real estate, if you have deal flow via relationships and if you have access to capital, you have a competitive advantage over so many people. So what you want to do is the relationships come down to someone. We are looking at a deal outside Tulsa. I have a partner in one of our other companies that's out in Oklahoma City. It's like an hour and a half drive. I know that person has access to check up on it as a project manager there on a regular basis. It's not something for me from Florida I'm going to go check on. So making sure we have someone on the ground. The problem like you had, Mike, is you didn't really have a great team that you could trust on the ground, it sounds like. So it's something that's make sure that you have a team on the ground that you can trust. And when I'm talking about a team, it's going to be someone, it's great that if you have someone that's one of your partners is on the ground there, that's number one. Number two would be, do you have your outside team? So I want to have access to an attorney that's good there. I want to have access to lenders that are good there, a property manager that's good there. I want to have vendors that aren't going to charge me, let's say, yellow page pricing, right? I want them to give me a deal versus if someone just called up and said, hey, you got to go, I have a problem with this furnace, and they go out there and charge me their straight rate. I want something. And you can get that through partnerships. So you can get that. Someone go, oh, no, we work with a really good contractor, and they're going to give us about 20% off what you would get if you did. Now that's a competitive advantage. That's someone I want to invest with. And I want to invest with someone that's a little seasoned too. I want someone that has experience that possibly went through a 2008 type situation where they had to edit it. And you can't really compare 2008 with COVID, I understand, but you've gone through an air time. It's very easy to be buying property in 2012 to 2019 and make money. It's very difficult, or it's something that you don't read in a book when you're going through 2006, 2008 type situations where now I'm collecting rent. It's a little late. I have to now work with tenants to pay the rent, and it's a lot more kind of negotiating, I guess, as you're going type situation, because you have to keep these people in the apartment versus if you're in an upmarket and everybody wants to move into the area where your property is, you go, don't even worry about it. We're going to evict you. You know, we send out the letter on the third day that you haven't paid, kind of thing. And when you're in a pullback, that's something that you want to avoid, because you want to, the biggest cost in multifamily real estate is turnover, between lost rent and between what we call the make ready, which is preparing that apartment to rent. So,
and full disclosure, my GC that I had out there was awesome. It was just, you know, there were things that popped up that we just did not see coming, you know, and when you have a 100-year-old house, I mean, yeah, the surprises can happen for sure. In your own experience, what are the pros and cons of self-managing properties?
I kind of like touched on a little bit with the passive investing. It's really depending on your time. So if you're self-managing, if you do have the time, like Mike was saying earlier, if you're a younger guy, you know, you're able to, you know, you're able to house hack something and you can self-manage it because you're living in the property and you want to get that knowledge. I mean, when I self-managed for 6 years, maybe it was a little longer than I should have or could have, but the information you learn will outweigh anything that you learn from a podcast, YouTube, any book, because you're actually there on the ground and you're going to lose money with a contractor and someone that tells you next week, checks in the mail, even though they live a floor below you. And that's the thing too, is that that's going to happen to you. And it's just a normal thing. And then you become a lot more street smart and you become a lot more savvy of an investor and understand exactly what's going on. I mean, we got it down to, when I was self-managing it at the end of it, we appealed taking care of the snow, we appealed taking care of the lawns, and I really was just collecting rent and then passing calls back and forth. That can be very time consuming too when people want to pay you face to face. But it's one of the things too, is that that's a good problem to have when your biggest problem is collecting rent from people that want to pay it to you. But it's something that if you have the time, do it. If you don't have the time, buy a bigger property and get a property manager. But if you go, hey, this is my 40 year, my lifetime thing is to be a multifamily investor, you're not going to get any better schooling than doing it yourself. And if you're just conservative with the properties you're doing and you do your full tenant checks, you don't take anybody's word, right? Don't believe anybody what they say. Do all the background checks that you need to do. And you're going to mitigate a lot of issues, but you're going to learn a lot about dealing with everything. You'll learn about contract. You'll learn about contractors. You'll learn about construction like you did, Mike, with your 100-year-old home. And I can tell you, I have a couple properties that are 120 years old. Man, the amount of stuff that goes wrong with them. But when you've done the work and it's done correctly, they can run pretty seamlessly. It's just that a lot of people avoid doing work on those properties. So yeah, self-managing, if it's your lifetime thing, if you're a busy professional and you're making a lot of money somewhere else, or you have a good job or something, a good business going, maybe it's something that you take someone on to as a partner. Maybe you invest passively, or maybe you buy a bigger property where you can have a good property management company that won't eat you alive of fees, run it for you.
Yeah, sounds like you just shot me in the face. No, I'm kidding. yeah, I mean, that's all stuff that I wish I would have really looked more into that and did a little more research before I bought this property. So when we decided to buy this duplex, we were looking at multiple properties and we were doing, you know, we were running numbers on a whole bunch of them. And then we just, you know, this was the one, right? But you know, things came up. The property was still profitable even after the work I had to get done to it, after collecting all the rents and paying the debt service. It still wound up being profitable. But at this point, it became so much of a hassle because I can't go out there to do any of the stuff I want to do myself, that we put it back on the market. So it's actually under contract right now. Hopefully, nice. It'll be closing here soon. Once we resolve a small thing, and then we can move on to something else. You know, I'm really a fan of syndications after learning so much about them from other people, and even like, you know, bringing you on and talking about it, man, you're getting me pumped. Like, yeah, this is definitely the right route to go, you know? So for those busy professionals, right? So, you know, myself, I'm still active duty in the Navy. I'm also a realtor associate. And, you know, I run this podcast and a blog. I am super like stretched thin for time. So like, if I don't follow my planner and my calendar, like to the T, things really get messed up. So what about like using virtual assistants? Do you have any experience with that? Or do you know anybody else that does that?
Yes, yeah, so we use a lot of virtual assistants for our other company that my brother runs full-time, our payment company. We use virtual assistants there, and we kind of get a lot of the time-sensitive tasks off. We use it with our real estate company, preparing newsletters, generating content, editing videos and audio for podcasts and YouTube. All these different tasks that you can take off your plate is you can do it little by little, and nothing feels better than doing it. The main thing I think people make a mistake with virtual assistants is that they think that you're going to hire someone, they're going to be perfect. It's not true. And I read somewhere that for every hour you want to outsource, you need to spend 36 hours training them. I feel that's a little high, but you have to go in with the mindset, I'm going to hire this person. They have experience in this field. They're probably going to do it better than I'm going to do it. I can teach them what to do, and they're going to like doing it. And I have to say, I'm going to have to fix it. You know, spend 10 or 15 hours to try to take these hours off my plate. But the thing though is that once it's done, it runs smoothly. Like, I hate updating newsletters and doing all that stuff, right? So someone does that for me. You know, it just like all different types of things, that reaching out to different people and things like this, that can all be taken off your plate. And it's very inexpensive. And it's easier now than it was years ago. And with Upwork, and if you're interested in that, 5-hour work week, or no, 4-hour work week with Tim Ferriss. And that's a great book to read about that. And that really opened my mind into doing that. I wasn't really doing it beforehand. It just shows all the stuff that you can outsource, and even high level activities. So he was outsourcing product fulfillment and stuff like this. I didn't even know was possible. But if you look it up and you have whatever type of business you have, utilize virtual assistants as much as you can. It'll be well worth it after you get it going. Maybe the first month or two, you'll hate yourself and you'll say, I can just do it better myself. Don't fall into that. Maybe it's not the right person, but maybe it is. And they just need to be kind of have their hand held a little longer. And once it's done, you're going to be so happy that you have.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot, actually, because that's probably something that'll be super helpful for me. There was something else that you'd mentioned too. So the 4-hour work week, that is a book that's been on my list. And I think it's moving up to probably going to be the next book I read now, because I keep hearing like, you got to read this book, you got to read it, especially when it comes to time management. That's probably something that I think will be very helpful for me and probably for a lot of people that are listening to this right now. So I'm definitely going to move that up my list. Yeah, that's great stuff, Charles. I really appreciate that. And, there was one more question I was going to ask you, but we've pretty much got it covered. That was, how can you invest in real estate while having a full-time job? And I think throughout the entire interview, we've pretty much nailed that thing in, right? That coffin's nailed shut. So I really appreciate all the perspective that you've given us. I have one more question I'd like to ask you, and this is probably the most important question of all. And that is, where can people find more information about you? Do you have a website you can share with us? Any social media profiles? And I'll make sure I have all the links in our show notes as well.
Yeah, sure. So what I do is, if anybody's interested in actively or passively investing in real estate, I do free strategy calls. They're 30 minutes and we can get on the call and we can just go over kind of what your plan is. And there's no strings attached. There's nothing like that. And you can just go to schedulecharles.com. It'll go right to my personal website, a page on there just for scheduling. And on my website, which is charlescurlo.com, you can find all my links for all my social media and everything about that, and our real estate investment company, which is called Harborside Partners.
All right, there you have it, everybody. So we'll make sure, like I said before, that those links will be in the show notes. It'll be easier for you to just copy and paste or click. Charles, absolute pleasure having you on, man. Thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decisions. All views by myself or our guests are solely our own and do not reflect the opinion of our employers.